Does everybody know what time it is?
It's time to grab your insurance card and fill out 150 pages of paperwork because we're going to the hospital.
That's right. It's grunt work. MD. Came to feel the pain, hardcore from the brain, all just to try to entertain, find out he's mental, based on accidental accidents, so he lacks in developmental progress. He's not the king, but Vila is, that's all, and this is the end of the talk sing on Grunt Work, the only podcast about the TV show Home Improvement that steps inside and walks this way, you and me, baby. Hey, hey! I am your host, Landon Morphine Drip Man Solano, joined always by my co-host, Truman. No one likes a crybaby Caps. Truman, it's good to see you. If you think that opening was a little chaotic,
yeah,
it's what? Because I wrote it 2 weeks ago and forgot everything that it was referencing.
I think that's the best way to do it, though. I mean, really, if we were serious about making this a good podcast, we would prepare all of our material and then spend 2 weeks forgetting it and then read it for people fresh. Because, I mean, as you all know, we script out every minute of this podcast. I mean, a layman might think that
this is Mammoth-esque, the level of detail of our dialogue. I mean, you think that I don't know how to speak properly? Every single word interruption that I give myself is scripted.
You know, and that's a piece of careful characterization that Landon and I agreed upon when we were kind of designing the Truman and Landon characters we were going to adopt for this podcast. And I think that it's been very powerfully put forward. I mean, listen, I've never seen the Hudsucker Proxy, but I decided that the Truman Capps character would have a fixation on it in lieu of a personality, because that would be an interesting piece of the human psyche to explore.
Yeah, and you know, they say that the best actors aren't afraid to look ugly. So, you know, good for you, Truman.
Yeah, listen, by that logic, I am a regular Marlon Brando over here. I did think that was a chaotic opening, but let me tell you, this was kind of a chaotic episode this week, so
yes,
it fits.
I don't know, I went from Method Man into Pour Some Sugar on Me. I don't know why. But I did.
It must have made sense at the time when we were going to record an episode right before I left for vacation, and then I had to cancel at the last minute and left you in limbo. But
yeah, and so the preamble for this is just I am when I took notes on this episode, I was not here mentally. I know that you were the one that had to postpone schedule wise, but I was prepared to go into this, maybe not rightly so, in a very bad mindset. I was just at the forefront of a really, really bad episode of depression, and like it just was not. I was not here for it, and so I'm curious. I tried to watch the episode before we recorded today just to review it.
Yeah,
but I didn't review my notes, so this is going to be a very chaotic episode.
You know, and look, that's what you come here for. It's the controlled chaos. We're basically the Muppet Show. If the Muppet Show was just two dudes talking and no hijinks or music.
We are like those cannons that set off controlled avalanches.
We are like that fireworks show from 2012 in San Diego where, due to a computer glitch, they did an entire 15-minute fireworks show in 10 seconds. That chaos was not very controlled, let's be honest.
No, it was not.
Great video, though. Every fireworks show should be 10 seconds. Go on.
I am just as excited as our listeners to hear your synopsis this week, because I've forgotten a lot of what's happened to this episode outside of just briefly skimming through it. So, Truman, tell us what happened on this week's episode of Home Improvement.
Landon, I don't mind if I do. Tim is over the moon when he learns that his next episode of Tool Time will break Bob Vila's record for the most consecutive tool show appearances by any host. And to mark the occasion, Al and Heidi have arranged for a live, on-location shoot where Tim can lay asphalt using a steamroller. But when Tim you've already cracked the code of some of my title guesses. There's a little spoiler alert for you. But when Tim badly injures his shoulder the day before the shoot, his doctor informs him that he'll need emergency surgery and cannot film the show. Unwilling to be shown up by his nemesis Bob Vila, Tim sneaks out of the hospital to film his record-breaking show and gets so badly re-injured in the process that he has to miss the air show he was planning to take Mark to that weekend. With Mark and Jill both furious at him, Tim has to figure out a way to heal his son's opinion of him while also healing his shoulder injury.
That was a good synopsis, sir.
Thank you. Yeah, you know, a lot of elements of that episode seem to kind of come out of nowhere in that synopsis.
Yeah.
They actually do a better job of arranging things in the episode. I don't know why I'm, like, post-ambling my synopsis. This is...
Yeah, I don't know. Just take the compliment and let's move forward.
Actually,
I do want to say one thing that I should have specified before you read the synopsis, because it could have played into it, is I want to... There's not going to be any rewards on the table here, but a few episodes ago, I said, I think I've got the idea for our next Chalupa challenge.
Yes.
Which was Pee-wee's Playhouse Rules. I wrote a word preceding this recording.
Oh.
And if you say the word at any point during our recording today, our listeners will win whatever the eventual Chalupa is. Someone on Discord, I think it was Farah on Discord, suggested the Special t-shirts.
Oh.
I'm looking into the cost efficiency of that. I would love to do that, but we'll see if it's practical or not.
We need to like win a MacArthur Genius Grant for this podcast so we can just do the most ridiculous Patreon giveaways. Like, hey, Fabergé eggs for everyone. I also agree that
we should win
a MacArthur Genius Grant, because clearly what we're doing here is important for society.
I've got the word. And if you say it, I will let you know. So let's continue with the episode.
Boondoggle.
Sherman,
is that the word?
That is not the word.
Antiquing.
No. Do you want to guess that title?
I like that. It was a sassy spin on that. Guess that title. It was like you're calling a cat or something. Yes, Landon, I do want to guess that title.
What's your version of cat calling?
Listen, I have, my version of cat calling is with the windows of my car up, very quietly saying, ma'am, you look nice today. I'm only saying that for myself, because you shouldn't cat call anyone. Okay, four options for titles.
Okay, all right.
First one, Blue Angels in America.
Okay, all right.
Now you'll find, Landon, that that is a factual title, because the Blue Angels are in this episode, and it does take place in America.
That's true, but there's a lot less of an AIDS allegory, although there is a lot of hospitals.
I mean, yeah, you know, I mean, it's in the subtext. It's all in the subtext.
I guess so. There's no... Luckily, Roy Cohn doesn't show up.
Yeah. Well, look, if Roy Cohn got picked up by the throat and, like, spun around by an angry suburban father, I wouldn't hate it. That'd be okay. Okay.
Agreed. Okay.
Next one.
Number two.
Heroes and Villains. I will agree with you with what you're about to say, Landon, which is that it's not a very good title. However, it is sort of a back pocket deep cut Beach Boys reference yet again, so it's more of a gift to you, my friend.
Thank you. I'll cherish it for all time.
Three. Tim's Asphalt Kicking.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Four. I think you could just a little feedback before you send it to the executives for green lighting.
Sure.
I think you could maybe lose the Tim's part. Just the asphalt kicking is a little more concise. This is my version of Justin Timberlake saying lose the from Facebook.
you know, Tim's asphalt kicking isn't cool. You know what's cool? Asphalt kicking. All right. You know, Landon, if you'd invented Tim's asphalt kicking, you would have invented Tim's asphalt kicking. All right, last option. hope you like Social Network jokes. Last option. Anesthesia and Asphalt.
Honestly, that sounds like a home improvement title. I'll give you the accuracy for that one.
Thank you, thank you. If I'm being honest, I'm not super proud of any of my options. I put some work into it trying to think of some good ones, but just sometimes, some episodes, I don't know, they don't lend themselves to... I'm going to talk to my therapist about it. It's fine. We don't have to do it right
okay,
now.
Okay, good. Yeah, I was going to say you should probably bring that up soon, but... okay, this... I'll give you your clue. The title of this is just kind of a pretty common saying.
Okay, common saying...
I mean, what does Tim do in this episode, or most episodes?
Tim gets hurt.
Mm-hmm. What's okay. maybe another word for that?
Another word for getting hurt.
I hope you keep in every single millisecond of this.
Oh,
silence.
Yeah, no. The long silence, the drone of my air conditioner in the background.
People tune in for... You know what? It's 2021. I think we need an ASMR version of the Jeopardy theme.
Oh, God. I'm definitely cutting that out.
Thank you.
Broken bones. I don't know. Nothing I said was going to be it, man. It's a common saying.
All right. Insult to injury is the actual title.
I should have guessed that. That is a common saying.
It is a common saying, and it was commonly broadcast on April 15th, 1997, directed by Jeffrey Nelson and written by Eric Horsted. I'm just going to go right into my personal reflections, sir.
Do it.
Fuck is up with the direction of this episode?
Thank you.
The camera is all over the place. Like, it's even weird. I know there are dream sequences, but even outside the dream sequences, it's like, what the fuck? What prompted these choices?
It's so weird. I'm so glad that I feel like we need to try and interview the director of this episode, honestly, because I just want to know. I love a lot of the choices that he made. It was so wild. It was like a Terry Gilliam movie at times, or like just the way that these shots were set up.
It does often, and I'm going to get into a lot of horror references.
Oh, get ready, everybody.
So buckle in. Up, buddy. It honestly did feel like a Charlie Band horror film, like a Full Moon Features, you know, demonic toys or Puppet Master, or like, hey, Magic Island. That was a Charlie Band movie.
Was there a pizza tree in this?
I'm looking at the floral arrangement in the background of the Taylor home. I can't, it's a little too out of focus to know if there are pizza four leaves or not. I don't believe there are.
Well, we don't know. I mean, maybe it's not in bloom at this time. Like maybe the pizza buds have not sprouted.
The toppings bloom first and then the crust comes, and that's when you know it's ripe and ready to eat.
But the problem when if you buy it when it's out of season and wait for it to bloom, you don't know what kind of toppings you're going to get. So like sometimes it's anchovies and you're like, oh no, now my whole house stinks.
That's right. If you see some anchovies blossoming, you nip them off the tree first, and then you wait for the second crop to grow in.
And then you can propagate those into another pot to grow an anchovy tree.
Yeah.
Folks,
and then
that's
you can
take
that one outside.
That's our Magic Island pizza tree bit, referencing an episode we did 20 years ago.
About 20 years ago, yeah.
Yeah. I would say that this episode, my biggest takeaway is that this episode was camp. That is just, it was high camp.
Yes, I would agree with that. I do have one more note,
yes,
though, which is, or reflection, which is like, this is another Mark episode that is taken away from Mark.
Yes! Give Mark some agency, please.
Tell Mark's story. Somebody out there. You recognize that there's ample story to be told here.
You know, Mark, the airplane-loving karate aficionado, is an interesting character who, I mean...
Who's maybe a game master. Let's not forget that.
Yes,
he's a game
yes.
master.
Yes.
Who also kind of knows... I mean, we never got confirmation as to whether or not he built that hot rod. He might actually be a mechanic savant.
You know what? Maybe having all these interesting qualities but never being the center of attention is what leads him to his upcoming goth phase that we've been
perhaps
teasing for about 20 years now.
Since the Magic Island episode.
Pretty much. I definitely... I would be lying if I said I didn't enjoy this episode simply because it looks and feels different from every other episode we've watched.
Yes.
Like, I've never seen... Like, they shot this guy. I mean, it doesn't look like a movie, but they shot it kind of like they were trying to shoot a movie, or like they were trying to win best cinematography or something.
Yeah. To me, it feels like they fed all previous episodes of Home Improvement into an AI, and that they said, hey, AI, make a Home Improvement script out of this information, and then sent the AI to go and direct the episode based on its own script. And this is what it came up with.
Look, I mean, give this AI an Emmy. I think it did a pretty good job on the directing level. And truthfully, even writing-wise, I think a lot of the script holds up pretty well. Like, structurally, the story, like, the stakes of the episode are laid out, I think, pretty well. The concept of the Blue Angels show and its significance to Mark are established mm-hmm. right from the jump in the cold open, and then that kind of comes back around in the second act.
It's even a reference to earlier episodes. I mean,
yes.
That's been a thing in the past with Mark.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, in so many regards, this episode is doing so much right, but then, boy, it does not end well. this episode, like so many others, ends with Tim does a shitty, selfish thing, and then gets everything he wants, pays basically no price for it, and is able to fix everything by making a phone call and doesn't even apologize.
But I'll tell you what. If we spent season 3 watching the absurdity to get to that place, it would be a lot more tolerable.
Yes. Yeah. Like, it's one thing when you make us swallow some uncomfortable Tim behavior and it's just a standard 3-camera setup. It's totally... When you put us into a weird kaleidoscope of high camp and horror, a spoonful of fancy directing makes the misogyny go down. I think that's the that's the lesson from today.
Well, Truman, I regret to inform you that we have a code green in room 237. Get me 20 cc's of adrenaline and a deep dive stat.
I'll be right there, Doctor. I'm grabbing the crash cart now. I almost said the cash cart, which I guess is the cart where you answer trivia questions to get to where you're going.
That's right, yep.
Great jokes, great jokes.
Ben Bailey walks in wearing scrubs. We start at the Taylor's home. It's dinner time. The Taylors are sitting around a table about to have dinner, and they're all saying grace. Now,
yep.
I'm not going to make too big a stink out of this, but it's always... I remember mentioning how jarring it was on the Christmas episode years ago when just this sort of thing gets... Like, it's not a common thing. I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I'm just saying it's weird to just suddenly see... the family sitting down and having to say grace with the word amen before they can start eating.
I agree. It's not like something that upsets me or anything. It's just interesting for me to see this because I feel like, I don't know, you don't see a lot of overtly, I don't know, you don't see a lot of religion in normal yeah. mainstream family sitcoms. So it's just kind of weird to be like, oh yeah, the Taylors are Christians. I guess I'm not surprised. I just didn't know they
yeah,
did this.
It's, just it's a strange reminder.
Yeah, yeah.
And it would be different if it was, you know, more integrated into the show on a, you know, more consistent basis. But whatever, I didn't want to make a big stink out of it, as I said. It was a weird note to start on.
Yeah, and of course, we shouldn't overlook the fact that as they're all saying grace with their eyes closed, the grunt creep is on the table, stealing a dinner roll from the basket
me.
Of rolls. What?
The proper term is pulling a Benny.
Oh, yes. Okay, yes. The grunt creep is pulling a Benny by stealing food and running off with it.
Yes.
The fact that the grunt creep is not praying, I think, confirms that the grunt creep is an atheist. So that's good representation on
okay.
90s TV, at least. Or that in the void there are no gods or kings, only
of
creeps.
Course.
Yeah.
As soon as they finish saying grace, Mark and Randy get up and go, okay, I'll turn the TV on. And Jill stops them immediately, like, sit, stop, nope, not gonna do that.
Nope, we are just going to spend 20 minutes talking to each other. And Randy goes, 20 consecutive minutes? And, you know, Tim backs her up on this, and they kind of try to force some conversation down. You know,
my only note here, like, I didn't write a lot of dialogue in this episode, so I'm gonna rely on you for that. That's part of my
nice.
Like 2 weeks and having it not fresh in my memory, so I don't even rely. I'm not gonna trust what I do remember. So, my note though was but the Bulls are playing the Pistons, which I have to imagine was their protest why they were getting up to turn the TV on.
Well, yeah, so yeah, Jill, you know, Tim is backing Jill up and saying, effective immediately, they, you know, these are the rules, effective immediately. And then, you know, Brad says, Dad, the Bulls are playing the Pistons tonight. And then Tim says, these are the rules, effective tomorrow night. But then,
okay,
which is, you know, it's a good bit. But Jill overrules him. There's just a lot of kind of awkward banter around the table. Jill is like,
yeah, she asks, what's up? Yeah. She tries to like engage in the conversation. What? Okay, so just tell me what's up with your life. And they kind of go around the table and go, nothing.
The boys are just nothing
going on at school. Nothing. And she's like, there must be something you want to share. And Mark pipes up and says, well, he's excited to go see the airfield with Dad next weekend.
Yeah, the Blue Angels are performing there, and Tim goes, remember when they let me ride in the back of an airplane? And Brad goes, yeah, they'll never forget it. They were hosing out the plane for a week, which is, I mean, it, you know, it's just an interesting change to have a reference to Tim vomiting instead of a reference to Tim shitting. I think that's progress. I don't know what that is.
It makes him a full person. I mean, yeah. Liquids could come out of every orifice.
Yes, true. Everything comes full circle.
Apparently, Mark and Tim go every year, and this year they're going to have the F-117 bomber, Maverick bomber, something about a Maverick. I didn't catch all of it.
Yeah, and it's going to be doing a simulated bombing run, and then Tim and Mark start nerding out over what type of fake bombs it's going to be dropping, and they're having.
I love this. Of all of the moments in this episode, Jill here might be one of my favorites, because she just kind of like chews with a smile and she's like, isn't this great, having a conversation just like a family.
she is really like very much like, I'll take it, it counts, this is what it is. And then Randy with the alley-oop, yep, nothing brings a family together like bomb talk. Which, if it's the McVeigh family, might actually be true.
That's our Die Hard podcast.
Okay.
We get a bunch of fighter planes bombing the scene, taking us to the theme song.
Take that scene, boo! shouldn't have financed terrorists. That scene.
We come out of the theme song, unless you have any notes on it.
No.
I think. Listen, Truman. Landon. I know I've given false promises in the past.
Yes.
I think. We're down to the last few episodes of season 6. I am almost positive the theme song changes next year. These are the last times,
dude,
we will ever see these kids at this
age.
Dude,
I don't know, man.
Mark is a fetus in these opening credits.
We've been having this conversation so many times that you, like 12 years ago, were saying, Mark is a fetus in these opening credits. I'm sure they're going to change it at the beginning of season
but
2.
They only have 2 seasons left. They're not going to put out the money for 1 season's worth of opening credits. It's got to change next season.
Landon, you keep trying to apply any sort of coherent logic to the decisions of the people who make the TV series Home Improvement, and you get burned every time.
I do.
I want to believe.
Is it wrong to have hope?
No, it's not wrong to have hope. And I do, okay, and I, you know, like Fox Mulder's poster in his office in the basement of the FBI building, I want to believe that we will get a new opening credits next season. And
in the sky, it's just a hammer flying.
Yeah. No, actually, mine is just Al want to believe, and it's like the same picture of the UFO, but then kind of a fade-in, like, translucent image of Al's benevolent like, face behind it.
Like the sun from the Teletubbies.
Yeah. Honestly, yes. Every morning, the Al's face sun just rises and says, I don't think so, Tim.
We go from the theme song to behind the scenes of Tool Time. Tim has just arrived to work, and Al catches up with him. He's really excited about something.
Yes, because the National Home Builders Society called, and Tim goes, I paid that fine. But evidently, okay, so first, I guess there's an award for consecutive appearances on a Tool show, and I guess the National Home Builders Society gives that out, and it looks like Tim is gonna get the
annually.
Record.
So, they give it out annually, and I want to point out, or do they give it out annually? Okay, maybe I've got my my understanding of it incorrect, which is more likely the case, because I thought it was an annual thing where it's like, but the person who's just in the lead is going to get it every single year, so that doesn't make any sense, provided that they don't step off the air.
Yeah,
I guess it makes more sense that, like, they only give out the new award whenever the new person usurps the previous person.
What I want to know is what happened to Bob Vila to take him out of the running? Like, what happened to this old house?
Well,
he
left this old house at one point.
Oh, really? What did he do? Yeah, did he find a new house?
He started his own show called This New House.
I mean, well, then if he started a new show,
when he left,
it seems to make sense that he would still be getting the appearances in. I don't know. I'm assuming some kind of Tonya Harding, like, foul play on Tim's part.
Oh, actually,
like, he hired someone to,
yeah, I wouldn't put that past Tim either, but it looks like he left this old house in 1989. So that's even before Home Improvement.
Whoa. Well, okay. So maybe he was like making shows continuously, but because there was the gap for a few years after he left this old house, maybe that's what did it.
He left this old house in 1989 and started Bob Vila's Home Again in 1990. So
wow.
No time off.
I have to say, this is unrelated. Well, no, this is related to everything. I just remember as a kid flipping through channels looking for something to watch. Seeing any of Bob Vila's shows was like seeing the girl from The Ring. It's just like, get away from that shit as fast as you can. Nothing entertaining will happen here. I would rather watch a rerun of MASH, a show I do not understand at all, than watch Bob Vila, like, talking about drywall. Oh, God.
And yet, I don't know, I feel like there's something that would appeal itself to me at the age I currently am, where, like, if I was just passing through channels and saw Bob Vila, a very nice person, just trying to explain some real world knowledge to me that would be functional in my life, I would appreciate that.
No, and absolutely, this is the difference between childhood and adulthood. Adulthood, you appreciate Bob Vila and what he has to offer. And also, listen, I now willingly seek out MASH. I love MASH. I think about MASH in my spare time. I think it's a brilliant show. So we've grown up, Landon. When Supertramp wrote the logical song, they were talking about what's happened to us right here.
Sherman, one little tangent off your tangent. I just want to say that I recently realized that I am now older than Tim Allen was when he began acting on this show. And that makes me feel weird.
I feel like I've done this bit before, but again, Robin Williams hugging you and saying it's not your fault. That's
dot gif.
Yeah, that's hard. That's a harsh one, man. I think I am. This year, I'm going to turn the same age that George Wendt was in the first season of Cheers. So that's my
there you go.
Personal cross to bear. But yeah, I get well. You know, love and support in these uncertain times. When are you going to get a show based on your stand-up comedy then? That's going to happen.
Well, that's
this
what
year,
I'm wondering.
Right?
I thought at 38, everyone just got one. Apparently, that's not the case. And now I'm 39, and I don't have anything to show for myself.
Yeah, I'm kind of, I hope that you get, like, talk to the authorities and get that sorted out, because I'm banking on getting my TV show.
I have 20 years of a podcast talking about somebody else's TV show.
Yeah, when's your time in this? Because this is, like, you getting your own show is how we create jobs for future podcasters talking about the crappy show you're going
to
make.
Exactly. Listen, you have to evolve from the baby shark that's swimming and feeding off of the big shark, and then become your own big shark so that someone can feed off of you at some point in life, right? That's the food chain.
I know. I think I'm pretty sure that's how it works, just multiple sizes of sharks. Anyway,
Bob Vila. Let's get back to Bob Vila. He, for some reason that's not explained, is no longer the holder of this prestigious award of consecutive renovation television show live appearances.
Good for him. I guess I'm glad someone is paying attention to these things and tracking these numbers. I mean, well, I don't know. On the one hand, it seems like the Home Builders Association is tracking minutiae and wasting time thinking about these things. But then, look at our show. But so Tim says,
"Where's our fucking reward?"
Yeah, I know. Someone give us something. But Tim says that he never thought he'd be able to break this record. And Al says, "From the day I met you, I knew you could break anything."
I love Al.
Al is in high form in this episode.
We get a hammer smashing the screen, transitioning us to a little bit later, where on the episode of Tool Time, Tim and Al are walking out to talk about vices in the workshop. And Tim says, "Don't drink or gamble."
But no, they're talking about the big, heavy metal things that you use to hold on to another thing when you're working on it. Again, I have internalized none of the lessons of Tool Time. But Tim,
I mean, of all of the workbench tools, I think I know vices the best, if for no other reason than they factor very prominently in the Evil Dead series.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah. I mean, yeah, when it's germane to a violent horror movie, that's when you can get, that's the kind of show Bob Vila should make, is a violent horror movie home improvement, series where every episode he's like trying to renovate the drywall while he's being chased by a maniac with a chainsaw. And then you're going to catch every piece of information in that. You are going to internalize that.
I'm not going to lie. I would absolutely listen to an Al Borland audio commentary track of him popping up to give me information about the tools being used, say in Fulci's City of the Living Dead, when somebody puts a head in a vise and then uses a drill press to go all the way through it. Tell me about that drill. I want to know what drill bit size they're using. I want to know what weight of a vise they're using.
Yeah. Everybody knows what time it is? It's torture time. which is also our podcast. So Tim goes on a tangent immediately, talking about how he's going to break the record for consecutive appearances on tomorrow's show. And this prompts Al to reveal that he and Heidi have a special Tool Time surprise for Tim. And then the camp begins. A spotlight...
Does it ever.
Spotlight shines down on Tim. Fancy, like, kind of beauty pageant music starts playing. And Al pulls out a microphone and starts... Like it's kind of like, I don't know, Price is Right. Like, let's show them what they've won. Tim, you will go to a house in Hamtramck and lay asphalt.
I have a number of notes here.
Okay.
First is, season two Landon would have gone immediately into a theory about, is this episode all a dream? Because from this moment forward, it feels like dream logic to me.
Yes. Yes.
None of it is rooted in any sort of reality, but it's like an almost reality. Straight down to like the spotlight hitting, like that feels like a moment from a dream in a movie.
Yes. Agreed.
Point number two. I'm not going to go into a theory, but that's just what I was going. So point number two, about this award. I believe that since the beginning of Tool Time, Tim and Al have hosted it together.
Yes.
Therefore, wouldn't Al also be involved in receiving this award?
You know, that's a very good point. Is there some, like... Is there some kind of co-hosting award that is separately given out to...
Is it specifically for the host and not, like, co-host? I mean, is Al losing out on a technicality here?
I mean, how many complex and intricate rules are there to the attendance trophy that they give to someone who has shown up on enough tool shows to get this pat on the head? That's a very interesting... It is interesting that Al is... only excited for Tim, relentlessly, completely, 100% excited for Tim, and at no point being like, I was here doing all the work and actually being good at the job. Why am I getting nothing? That's a very good point.
Exactly.
I never thought about
I mean, you can kind of use both of those, I guess, if you want to go into the dream theory, because, like, this is how it would play out in Tim's head, is that Al is just happy for him without any reserve whatsoever about him not being involved in it, to the point where Al then... dons what I assume is his audition tape for Family Feud.
Yeah.
Because he pulls out this microphone and speaks into a PA like he's hosting his own show.
Yeah. Yeah. And he throws it to Heidi and says, Heidi, show him what he'll be using to lay that asphalt. And Heidi is coming down through the audience with, like, he'll get to ride a 5-ton steamroller with a top cruising speed of 5 miles an hour.
I did write a few of these things. So, okay. Yeah. They're going to go down to a beautiful home in downtown Wixom. I always like to point out when they use an actual city in Michigan.
Of course.
So, Wixom, to asphalt a driveway while driving a 5-ton steamroller, which is 41 horsepower diesel engine, hydrostatic transmission, top cruising speed of 5 miles an hour. This is all for Tim. The audience starts chanting as if the wavy lines were about to begin and he's going to wake up in his bed.
I was
waiting for Freddy Krueger to pop up at some point.
Same for me. At this point when this was happening, I was like, this is either Tim's dream or my nightmare, because every like confetti and balloons fall from the ceiling. Everyone is chanting for Tim. He's there in the
spotlight.
Someone
has a sign. Heidi has given an audience member a sign, like a picture of a steamroller, and they're like hoisting it in the air.
And there's like all these kind of dramatic sweeping camera shots from behind the audience of everyone celebrating Tim. And it's kind of like I don't feel comfortable watching it. Like, you know, there's like bits in Starship Troopers when, you know, like at the very end, they've captured the brain bug and Neil Patrick Harris is like, it's afraid. And everyone's so excited that they've struck terror into this creature. And like, and it's everyone's cheering. But you and the audience are like, this feels like not good. I don't think I should be happy that these people are happy. It was like a Paul Verhoeven moment.
Jeffrey Nelson is just a non de plume for Paul Verhoeven, who's taking some TV work on the side.
Hey, look,
this was right after Showgirls.
Yeah, exactly. He had a lot of creditors to pay back. I too was thinking like this feels like a dream sequence. I don't even know. This is all for Tim Taylor, the king of tool shows. And at the height of his hubris, Tim grabs the vise and he hoists it over his head like, you know, like it's an award or like an Oscar or something. And then it's like very heavy and he staggers backward and like drops it and grabs his shoulder and shrieks in pain. And Al asks him, Are you okay?
He's like, do I scream in pain when I'm okay?
Total
dumb
Golden
idiot.
Girls joke. Total the Sophia Petrillo bit.
And we get an x-ray machine to the next scene. I do want to say, though, that this moment made me think, man, if Truman was only in DiGiallo, he would do a title guess based on either The Strange Vice of Mrs. Vada or Your Vice is a Locked Key, or Your Vice is a Locked Room and Only I Have the Key. Which are actual titles of movies.
You know, now that I'm realizing what a big role a vice plays in this episode, I could have gone with Inherent Vice, I could have gone with Miami Vice, I could have gone with The Odd Vice of Timothy Green. I even as a non-Giallo fan, I left a lot of money on the table there, and I feel bad about
that's
it.
Okay.
I have one more thing too, but go ahead. I don't want
to
step on you.
I was going to take us to the next scene, but
don't take us there. I just want to say I get that it's a joke on the show that Tim gets hurt a lot, but that's usually kind of peripheral to the episode. This is an episode where Tim getting hurt is central to the episode, and the way that Tim gets hurt is pretty like bland. Like he lifts a heavy thing over his head and he fucks up his shoulder doing it. Like, with all the budget, and there's a lot of budge in this episode. They budged the fuck out of this. There's a lot of locations. Yes. There's outdoor scenes. There's
unhinged
confetti.
Camera work.
Yeah. Like money was available for this episode. It's just kind of I don't know. It's not a very fantastical way for Tim to injure himself and put himself out of commission. Like, I don't know. It's kind of like get run over by like a dump truck or something, or like get electrocuted. Yeah, or the steamroller. You already rented the steamroller for production, guys. Come on, it's right there. Fish Called Wanda laid out the template for you. I don't know. It's just interesting that like for all the other ways that this episode is high camp and over the top, that Tim's injury is the sort of thing that I could do to myself right now, like by accident, like just a ordinary stress fracture from overexerting oneself. That's all.
Well, speaking of the fracture, we get an x-ray transition to the next scene, which is the doctor holding up Tim's x-ray to the light so that he can see exactly what this fracture is.
Yep. And the doctor tells him that he has separated his shoulder blade, which means he's going to have to go in for surgery, and then we'll have to spend tomorrow recovering and miss tomorrow's show.
Tim seems to be hopped up on the morphine, some sort of anesthesia drugs, because he's floating in and out, and he asks the doctor, how long do I got? And the doctor says, oh, I don't know, 50, 60 years tops.
That's...
I want to call into question this doctor's math and whether or not he should be practicing.
Yeah, that's...
Tim, a 40-some-year-old man, probably doesn't have 60 years left to live.
A 40-some-year-old man whose number one interest is red meat and inhaling exhaust fumes.
And being Tim the Toolman Taylor.
It put me in mind of Trump's doctor who said, like, oh, he's going to be the healthiest person to ever be president. He could live to be 200 years old. Hey! Yeah.
Oh, God.
So... Yeah, so already I'm doubting this doctor. I'm already looking for a second opinion. But
is it more evidence of it being all a dream because Tim believes that he has 60 years left when that really does just not hold any water whatsoever?
Like if you delivered a baby and looked at that baby and said 60 to 90 years tops, even then I'd be like, 90? Really? I mean, I don't know much about this baby, but that's still 90 is pretty old.
Tim still wants to do the show.
Yes.
And he still wants to go to the air show. He still wants to do everything ever that he ever wants to do and never stop doing the things he doesn't want to do.
Yes. Never stop, never stopping. And he's trying to explain this to the doctor, and he says, I'm breaking Bob Vila's record on tool time tomorrow. And the doctor says, what's tool time? And Tim laughs. And then he explains to the doctor, like, no, like, well, we can do the show here at the hospital after I come out of surgery. And the doctor goes, how can you think about doing a tool show when you're injured? And Jill just looks at him and goes, you really haven't seen his show, which is two thumbs up. Well constructed, solid joke. Really big fan of that.
Jill's great in this episode. But he says, well, can I at least go to the air show? And the doctor says, well, I guess as long as you get plenty of rest and don't try to pick up a plane while you're there.
Yeah,
the doctor I guess Jill says this, doesn't know Tim.
Yes, yeah, exactly. And I don't know, I like this, the just kind of, hey, remember that air show thing we talked about in the cold open? It's coming back, it's not just a one-off joke, it's a thing that will be important down the line, like they just, good bit of
not the
shoe leather there.
Give us the character who has the most emotional stake in it, but, you know, whatever, this is Home Improvement, I'm getting what's given to me.
Yeah, exactly. Again, we grade on a little bit of a curve here.
But, okay, so even with the direction, is already getting a little, I mean, we've already seen a number of instances of weird camera angles, like in the opening scene around the dinner table. We see some shots on, like, Brad that I'm like, oh, I've never seen that angle on the wall before. And in Tool Time, like, a really aggressive shot of the audience. And now we're getting these, like, almost bird's eye view of Tim in the bed rather than just a normal, like, shot reverse shot. It's just really weird. I don't understand a lot of the choices that are being made.
I mean, like, they had to put work into doing this. They had to elevate the cameras and stuff. Like, they had to set up equipment. It took them longer to make this episode than a standard episode, and I don't know why. Like, I enjoy that they did it, and I celebrate it. I feel like the inertia when you've been on a three-camera sitcom that's been going for this long, it's like, the crew knows how to make the show. Let's just do the thing. We can do the setups. You can get it done quick. To go against that and say, let's make it a little bit harder for no real reason. I respect that.
For no reason. Okay, so we get a scene slide transition to the operating table.
Yep.
Tim is now under a sedative. The doctors, there's two doctors in there.
Well, actually, they're surgeons.
I
don't know.
Truman.
I don't know if you ever watched a show called Scrubs, but it was made
Truman
very clear.
Why are we doing this?
That the surgeons and the doctors are different people. Zach Braff taught
their
me that.
Then why is the surgeon giving Tim the detailed notes? Because it's the same guy.
Well, Landon, you see, on set, sometimes you gotta condense characters to save on actors.
I'm just saying, this isn't my fault. This is the TV show's fault for giving me false information.
Okay, true. No, I blame this show. I blame this show. And I blame Scrubs for making me smug about it. Yes.
The character names are Dr. Nell, who was just talking to Tim, and Dr. Martin, who is joining him in surgery now. Hmm. I'm gonna go into a twofer character actor corner. How do you like that, sir?
I love that, because the character actor playing the Doctor is delightful, and I enjoyed his performance very much.
His name is Marcello Tuber, or Ooh. Tubert. I don't know how you pronounce it. He's an Argentinian actor.
Yeah.
Mostly known for television, with one really important film under his belt.
I'm trying to think of your definition of important versus my definition of important. What's the film?
Think through the course of the season, our definitions have come closer together.
Okay.
I will get to the movie in just a minute. He has 159 credits.
Jesus.
His first TV credit going back to Heart to Heart. He was also in Knight Rider, Saint Elsewhere, The Golden Girls, The A-Team, L.A. Law, Moonlighting, The Next Generation.
Wow.
I stopped taking notes on his credits when I came to the only credit that matters, Leprechaun 3.
Oh, Jesus Christ. I could have known it was a Leprechaun movie. At least
directed by Brian Trenchard-Smith, who did Leprechaun 4.
Wow, but he didn't have a stable of actors who he took with him from movie to movie.
No.
It's not like Sarah Paulson being in every American Horror Story and American Crime Story.
True, exactly. But he is very memorable, if a little, not by any fault of his, a problematic character in Leprechaun 3. But he is pretty aggressively tortured by the leprechaun in that movie for a big chunk of it. So he's in it often and really goes through the ringer. Saying here, he was also in G.I. Joe Retaliation as the French leader.
French leader. Okay. Is that like French Stewart?
Like the French president. Do you want to guess whether or not he was on ER, and I will give you your clues if you want them?
Well, so I get to choose whether I guess? I mean, the guy plays a doctor,
you,
right?
You get to choose whether or not you want your clues, or you can just guess.
Choose clues, yes. was he on... Okay, well, first, I have to say, just based off of his filmography or his TVography, that list of anyone who's been on Saint Elsewhere, The A-Team, and Moonlighting should get, some kind of... Like, they should be in the 80s Hall of Fame. That's just a big trifecta of 80s culture. And Knight Rider, yes. To say nothing of Knight Rider.
I'm looking at a few others. Seinfeld, Dharma and Greg, Roswell, Charmed.
Jesus.
I mean, he's been in he's done voice work on some of the Batman stuff, Batman Beyond, the Batman animated series, some video games, Spyro. I don't know if you've ever played any Spyro.
Yeah, Spyro the Dragon. I know Spyro.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's Spyro. He's a friend of mine. Yeah, went to college together.
He's done just about everything an actor can do.
Well, has he been on an episode of Cheers?
That he did not do, no.
Well, I've made a liar out of you, Landon. Frasier?
You have. He was on an episode of Frasier.
Nice.
A 1998 episode called Roz Alone.
Alone. Alone. Okay. I remember that episode. Okay. I don't necessarily remember him in it, but I remember the episode. Okay. Big question. NYPD Blue?
Really informative for our listeners. He was not on NYPD Blue. But was he on ER?
Yes.
Interesting.
With the sheer amount...
You got a no to NYPD Blue, but you're saying yes to ER.
You know what? Honestly, I mean, it's... with the sheer amount of TV work that he did and with how prolific he was over the course of two different decades of big TV, that's it. That's all I'm going to say. It's just noises.
Okay.
He had to have been on,
Can you read that? Read the transcript back for me so that we can translate what he just said.
Yes, he was on ER for three
episodes.
No. Well, he makes a fine doctor.
Playing Father Joe Galloway.
Ooh, not a doctor.
all in 2001. So how about that? Let's go into the other character actor. Michael Holden is playing the Doctor, whose face we never see in this episode because he has a mask over.
Wilson style.
Prescient for 2020-2021. 49 credits. He has TV credits going back to his first one in Happy Days.
Ooh.
Freddy's Nightmares, which might be this episode.
Yeah, true. Timmy's Nightmares. Truman's Nightmare. Truman and Landon's Nightmares.
He was on an episode of The West Wing. And then again, I stopped taking notes because I was fascinated to learn that there was a Time Cop TV series.
What?
That completely missed my radar, but apparently there was one and he was on it.
Okay. That's honestly a great idea for a TV series. Every episode he goes to a different time period. I guess that's basically Quantum Leap, except Quantum Leap, he basically goes to the 60s or the 70s every episode.
His character was Dome Technician.
Ooh.
How does a dome fit into Time Cop? These are questions I need answered. I need to watch Time Cop.
How much technology is there in a dome? I mean, it seems just like an architectural formation more than anything.
I mean, it could be good for electromagnetic feel. I mean, there are all kinds of technological answers that could be provided to us if we get to watch Time Cop, the TV series.
And we'll make a podcast about it called Dome Work. All right. Was he on NYPD Blue?
Oh, he was on NYPD Blue in two different episodes playing two different characters.
Ooh, interesting. You know, against my better judgment, I think I'm going to say he was on ER.
Do you want to know whether or not he was on Frasier or Friends or Cheers?
I don't care if he was on Friends. And those answers normally, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I could ask you, but I don't think that's going to have much bearing on my answer. I still think he was on ER.
Okay. Well, he was in 8 episodes of Cheers, so...
Oh, Jesus, wait, holy shit, no, now I do want to know, wait, what seasons? how are our episodes so long? Oh, because Truman spends like an hour interrogating Landon about which Cheers episodes every character actor is on.
He's a consistent customer named Joe, who comes in from 1986 to 1992 in 8 different episodes. So
what?
Long-term...
He's one of the barflies.
Patron.
Okay. All right. Thank you for telling me that. That's very interesting to know.
I am seeing now he also was in an episode of Quantum Leap. You're saying he was on ER, sir. I am sorry. He was not on ER. But he is in the ER here, playing a doctor surgering on Tim.
He's in an ER. That's what really counts. It's a moral victory.
You lost on a technicality, just like Al Borland.
God, every time. So Tim, you know, they put the anesthetic on him. They have him start counting backwards from 100. I immediately assumed that we're going to get some joke about Tim not knowing how to count, reminiscent of the what's the number for 911 bit from several seasons ago. but he goes under and he hallucinates the surgeon holding a trophy, giving the award not to Tim but to Bob Vila. And
I'm seeing, I don't know that this has reached you yet, but I froze frame the episode on this character, because we don't actually see Bob Vila in this moment. He does hand over the trophy, but we don't, as an audience, get to see a cameo by Bob Vila, but we do see somebody playing Bob Vila accepting the award.
Oh, really? I didn't realize that in the scene itself. I've been looking down and taking notes. I'm still waiting on your text to come through.
Yeah, it's probably not going to, because I realized I sent it in a shitty way. So,
but that carrier pigeon is going to take forever to get here, Landon.
It really is.
Yeah. So. So anyway, he has this hallucination of that happening, and I'm thinking, like, okay, well, that's our first little bit in this wacky dream sequence. I wonder what's going to happen next. And then we cut to Tim waking up in his room while the doctor is on the phone flirting with a nurse. And
I do want to say,
in
regard to Freddy Krueger, I've never been on his level in terms of, like, once he became a wisecracking monster. He used, and it's a word I don't particularly like, and I don't like using it. I don't even like repeating it, but he uses the word bitch a lot.
Yes, he did.
And he has a very famous quote from, I think it's the third one, it might be the fourth one, says, "Welcome to primetime, bitch."
Yeah.
When he picks up a woman and then smashes her head into a television set. It's really actually a creative kill, but I don't particularly like the line. However,
killing the woman, fine. Using a derogatory term for women, that's where I draw the line.
If there was a cameo by Bob Vila accepting the award and then turning to break the fourth wall to look through Tim's mind into his soul and says, "Welcome to primetime, bitch," while holding the trophy, that might have just been the pinnacle of the series for me, and I'm really bummed that I missed out on that.
Yeah, you would have. But do you want the pinnacle of the series to happen now, or do you want to have it maybe happen later so you can have something to look forward to? I mean, we still have a couple seasons to go here, dude.
I don't know. I'd like to have some time to reminisce. You know, I think it's actually the perfect time for the peak.
Okay, that's fair. You say that now, but it took us this long to get through season six. It might, you know, we'll still have some time to come down, even if we hit it a little later. Yeah.
That's true. Okay, so what happens after this dream sequence?
So the nurse, the doctor is on the phone, standing with his back to Tim, flirting with one of the nurses. Tim wakes up and mimics the sound of a flatlining heart monitor
Tim overhears the conversation and is like, "Oh, I'll teach this guy. I'll play a little joke on him."
Beep, and the doctor
with his mouth.
Freaks out. Yeah, and the doctor
More questions about this doctor. The doctor should know there isn't a heart monitor in the room.
Yeah.
And he would know whether or not he set one up.
Yeah.
And B, he should know the difference between an actual heart monitor and someone doing a noise with their mouth.
Tim got the doctor he deserves in terms of overall competence, I think. And also,
Nell, no thank you.
My first note here is just, is this still a dream? Like, I spent the rest of this episode going, are we still in a dream?
I think, yep. You and I were on the same page here, even though we were 2,000 miles apart.
Oh, it's like the lake house. He
tells Tim, you've got to rest. You can't go back to work. Then he gets a page. He has to go do a thing.
Yep, doctor stuff. And so he leaves, and Tim is there alone. And then we get something that we've been getting a lot, which is Tim voiceover, which I feel like there are more Tim voiceover scenes in this season than there are Tim grunting scenes. Like,
That's a good question, yeah.
It's a lot of Tim voiceover, and it never really truly works.
We also get something that is equally baffling and something that I wish we didn't get, which is pretty close to a nutshot Tim decides to get out of the bed.
Landon, all damn afternoon we've been recording this thing, I've had stuff in mind that I want to talk about, and then you start talking about it first. I specifically was, as Tim is getting out of bed and his gown is riding up, I'm like, no, and then finally we see boxers, and it's like, not realistic, but that's fine, I'll take it.
It's a moment that I'm primed to like be prepared for, because as I mentioned many times on this podcast before, I'm a big fan of Three's Company.
They're fan of nuts.
An infamous nutshot in that show. Just do Three's Company nutshot, and you'll listen. Don't tell your mom I said that. You know, get your parents' permission before you do that Google search. Make sure you have incognito mode open, and you know, set your VPN to somewhere in Germany you do that. You'll be treated to some John Ritter nuts.
Plug your laptop into a payphone so the feds can't track you. Also, or alternately, just don't look up Three's Company nutshot, because I don't know, you're not going to get anything that makes you happy. Or if
that
you do,
was
God
something
bless.
That was burned into my brain. I'm like, they showed that on Nick at Night? What the fuck? I'm always a little
more like Two's Company, if you know what I mean.
I don't know if you know this about John Ritter.
Oh shit. I did not know that. Now I'm gonna look that up. I wanna see this phenomenon for myself. So anyway, Tim has this VO where he's, you know, I don't need a rest, I'm great, I'm the tool man. A separated shoulder can't stop me. I once did a show with three broken ribs and my hair on fire. So he plans to break out of the hospital and go to the location to break Vila's record and then come back to the hospital. So he
he's working his way over to the closet so that he can get dressed and leave. And as he starts to do that, he lifts his shoulder, hurts it, and he's like, okay, note to self, no more lifting.
And
we get a dressing scene transitioning us to a little bit later. The spy music has started.
Yes, yes, which is just a little weird. And he's put on some more clothes, and he's like on his bed trying to put on socks, and then he's
got dressed with his arm. I do want to say, listen, I was in a car accident many years ago, and it gave me it ignited some sciatica in me. I've been in a position where I cannot put my socks on. This is real.
Yeah.
What Tim is going through here is a real thing.
This is not a dream. This is real life for millions of Americans. And he says, mental note, next time wear sandals. So is that how you resolved your situation?
Maybe. I don't remember.
Wow.
I lived in L.A., so I could have gotten away with it if it weren't for you pesky kids.
Yeah, it was me. Every time I ever saw Landon wearing sandals, I would heckle him relentlessly until he put on socks and then shoes.
But we get a pillow transition to a little bit later. Tim is now fully dressed and about to walk out the door, but he realizes, hey, there are people lurking around outside.
Yeah, so he picks up the phone and puts on his patented lady voice and calls for
how does that go?
Oh, well, it's a little something like this. Can you have Dr. Peterson paged for me? I want to talk to him. This is Paula in phlebotomy. Because he's heard, that was the nurse we overheard the doctor talking to. Which, I mean, good bit of shoe leather, good foreshadowing for that. And so then the doctor gets paged, and he hears, Paula wants to talk with me. And so he goes running off, you know, excitedly.
Yeah, real horny smile, and then straightens his tie and walks off screen. Looks around and is able to sneak out.
Yeah, again, these are the kind of horny doctors who populate the hospitals on ER and Grey's Anatomy and such. So part of why I knew actually, he was an ER guest.
This is actually Ellingham Hospital, not a real hospital. So if you are experiencing an emergency and live in Michigan, do not look for Ellingham. Do not put it in your GPS. Just drive to the place you're familiar with. Ellingham Hospital does not exist. You'll be going all the way to the UK.
Yeah, or just call 911 and have the ambulance take you to whatever hospital they feel comfortable with. Just don't insist.
Ambulances are expensive, though.
They are expensive. Look, if you're having a medical emergency, go to your health insurance website and look up your explanation of benefits and see what percentage of the ambulance ride they cover, and then determine whether or not you want to call the ambulance. But if you decide not to call the ambulance, don't go to Ellingham Hospital because it doesn't exist.
There you go. Tim,
unless you're in the UK.
A legit spy movie move where a trolley is going by. What do you call these things?
A crash cart, or just a cart.
A cart? Okay, a cart. Whatever.
Not a go-kart, not a Mario Kart. I don't know, it's just a little... It's a trolley thing full of, I don't know, like vials of blood and shit. I don't know.
It was filled with supplies, not a person?
I don't think there was a person on it. Maybe it was. Don't know, it was a one-second shot. I wasn't paying super close attention. I take notes.
Okay, well... Tim ducks behind it, and that's how he is able to sneak out of the room. We get a slide transition to a little bit later. He's sneaking around, and once he sees the doctor coming, he sneaks into the wrong room where apparently someone's getting a sponge bath.
Yep.
The doctor goes, oh, wait, I forgot something, or makes that motion with his finger like he put it in the air, like, oh, wait a minute, hold on, I forgot something.
Great
and
acting.
Pantomiming that, and then turning around. Listen, I've done that many a times when I see someone on the other side of the street where I'm like, oh, I don't want to talk to them. I better act like I forgot something and then go back home.
Look, it's the most natural piece of pantomiming. Everyone who's ever tried to avoid walking in a direction for some reason has cooked that up. How can I convincingly look like I just forgot something?
It's second only to when somebody is asking you for change on the street and you pat your pockets, even though you know you have no money in them to give. You're like, the general universal symbol for, oh, I'm so sorry you're in your situation, is your pockets.
I feel bad, but not that bad. He runs into this room, there's a shriek, and he comes running back out once the doctor's gone and says, you know, good luck with your sponge bath. and he's out, and he's gone, and he's away.
He is. We get a sponge. Tim, like, sneaks back out, and out of the door behind him, a sponge is thrown that transitions us to back home. Jill is on the... she calls the boys down to go visit their dad, and she's on the phone calling someone. I forget who.
Well, I mean, she... I thought she was calling the hospital, like, to try and talk to Tim to let them know they're coming. But, yeah, so she, you know, she calls, and the boys are wisecracking as they get ready, and... Tim doesn't pick up, and Jill says, "Oh, he's probably asleep. He was pretty out of it after those drugs. Let's go and meet him there." And Randy says, "Let's all wake him up together as a family." And then we go to the job site where Al and Heidi are doing the tool time live on location. And as Al is introducing it, Gary, the son of the guy who owns the house, this little kid, comes out and asks Al where Tim is. And Al goes, "Well, he's at the hospital with a boo-boo." And Gary goes, "What do I look like, a 3-year-old?"
And he does.
I would
Truman,
want that.
I want to just point out, this is obviously shot on location in L.A. This looks eerily similar to a house near where you live.
Really?
Like, this could be on your street.
I mean, it... You know, I saw it. I just kind of assumed that's Burbank, probably, or something like that. But then that much harder. I mean, I don't know, because that's just kind of close to ABC. It could be. It could be in my neighborhood. I got to go back and look at it again. Also, the thing about LA, folks, is that a lot of the houses around here kind of do look the same. but no, this probably was shot. They probably shot this within 5 miles of where I live.
Let's go into a quick character actor corner for this kid. His name is Derek Wilder. He has 10 credits. I'm not going to tell you any of what they are. Do you want to guess whether or not he was on ER?
Was he wasn't on Cheers, he's too young. Was he on Frasier?
He was not on Frasier.
NYPD Blue.
He was not on NYPD Blue.
I'm gonna say no to ER.
If you were gonna ask if he was in a TV series called Boober, yes. Boober? He was. Boober.
Boober. Is it a Boober?
Boober, B-O-O-B-E-R.
Is it a show about boobs? Because Baywatch was already on.
This was in 2016.
Oh, no.
It looks like an animated thing about the bird boober.
Oh, boy.
Anyway. Was he on ER? I can't remember what you said.
I'm going to say no, he's not on ER.
Of his 10 credits, one of them is Home Improvement, and one of the others is ER. He was on an episode of ER playing Clayton in the same year that this episode was released.
God damn it. That is unfortunate. That's really...
You hate this kid.
I hate this kid. I mean, this kid already seems kind of like an asshole, but, the character, not the actor. I'm not shitting on a child actor, but... that's upsetting.
It is upsetting.
I really needed a win on that one. Okay. So
we go back to the hospital. Yeah. Jill and the boys have arrived to see that Tim is not there. They're trying to find him, and Jill's like, "Oh," she gets another like premonition, like Brad crashed the car. It's like, "I know where he is."
Yeah.
And turns the TV on to Tool Time, and Al's talking to the camera, and we cut, you know, into the television set to go to the set of Tool Time, where a cab rolls up and Tim gets out of the car.
And do they cut? Nope. Just keep rolling. It's all live. Everything's live. Fuck it. We'll do it live.
Of course, you know, if Tim's in the car, he's going to say, "Don't worry about it. Just drive right up in front of the camera." He wants to make sure he's on screen before anyone says cut, just so that he doesn't miss out on his opportunity to win this award.
Yeah. Did they block off the street for this? Nah, nothing like that.
There's a lot of questionable safety issues with this Tool Time scene.
Well, this and every Tool Time scene.
Yes, but this one particularly, where they have a legit steamroller going back and forth and a child who has not been sequestered in the house or away from the equipment.
Yes, true. And the child's father is definitely on hand. He's just not at all involved in protecting his kid.
There's so many people at fault for so many different things here.
Yes, that's the could be said of so much of the world. So Tim gets out of the car and, you know, gets on screen. It's like, "Hey, I did it. I'm here. I'm doing it. I'm breaking the record." And
all I want to say to Bob Vila is, "Nanner, nanner, nanner."
I'm just tired, man. I'm just that picture of the 30-year-old cat who just looks so tired.
I'm the little kitten that has the tears in its eyes.
Oh God. So Tim goes up to the steamroller and is like going to get on it, and Al and Heidi are kind of trying to dissuade him from this. And at the hospital, We see a shot of the boys from, so the TV they're watching in the hospital is one of those hospital TVs that's mounted up by the ceiling of the room. And so we get this shot from the television's POV looking down at Brad and Mark and Randy, and they're all staring up the TV going,
and Jill,
and going, he wouldn't. He couldn't. And then Randy goes, he's dad.
I wish he had just broken the fourth camera, like looked over his shoulder into the camera and shrugged, and it freeze framed, and that was the end of the episode.
So Al tells Tim, "Oh, with your shoulder the way it is, you really shouldn't drive. You know, you might not be able to hit the brakes." And Tim goes, "Well, let's ask the guy who's in charge." And then he leans over one side of the steamroller and looks into the camera and says, "Tim, what do you think we should do?" And then he leans over the other side and looks into the camera and says, "I think we should go for it."
Again, this is more dream logic in terms of, like, they didn't have cameras set up there. Yeah, so who is he actually? There's you can see in the wide shot, there are no cameras there. So who is he talking to?
This episode is careening into Toontown. It's really weird. That's where this house is. I live close to Toontown.
Is this the steamroller that rolled over Christopher Lloyd?
It very well might be. I was doing a Fish Called Wanda thing earlier, but I think this is the real movie steamroller that we meant. Tim goes, he starts up the steamroller, and he starts going over the asphalt. Tim frets that he's going to crash into the garage, and Tim makes for a second like, oh my god, I've lost control, ah no, but then he stops it, and he was just joking and you know, ribbing Al. And So then Al is like, okay, well, why don't you get off the steamroller and let me finish the job? And Tim says, sure.
He climbs onto the steamroller to try to get Tim off, and I'm like, Al, did you not learn your lesson in the steel beam episode? Don't tell Mama, where he climbed onto the crane and was thrown off of it.
Yeah. I mean, it's like your prolonged exposure to Tim is making you be less safe on the job site. Tim. Right. Tim makes everyone less safe. It's the bad apple spoiling the whole bunch. So Tim says,
okay, we can yada yada yada. We yada 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 the steamroller. Tim backs it up, and the kid has been playing with his remote control car this entire time, and he backs over the remote control car.
Yeah, and we then the kid sees it and starts crying, and then Jill in the hospital is covering her face for all this, and she says, "Oh my god, I hear a little boy crying. Please tell me he didn't run over a little boy," which is pretty good.
And it was good. We cut back, though, to Tool Time, and Tim gets off there, and the kid calls him a big stupid head, which was contender for my favorite moment of the episode.
Cathartic for us, yes.
And Tim just leans down and goes, oh, don't cry. We're on TV. Nobody likes a crybaby.
And, hey, you know what? Here's a saying. Into each life, some rain must fall. And... okay, let me also just say briefly before we go on. Again, for an episode with a lot of budget, that this is the disaster? Like, Tim running over a kid's RC car? I mean, that sucks, and it's a shitty thing to do to that kid, and that's awful. But it's like, I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's just like, if that's the only thing that goes wrong on a shoot, that's really not that bad.
Whatever. Except I don't want for to what? It,
yeah. Except RC cars were very expensive in the 90s, and they meant a lot to kids, and yeah.
As he's telling the kid this and, you know, telling him basically, you know, toughen up, don't be a bitch on TV.
Yeah.
Gary's dad's shadow overshadows Tim, and Tim goes into the whole trope of, that's a big shadow. I bet your dad's right behind me. He's a big guy, isn't he?
Is he smiling?
All that sort of nonsense. And then Gary's dad proceeds to pick Tim up apparently with a GoPro on his wrist, because the shot on Tool Time is like POV shot of Tim being lifted into the air.
It's like do the people
it
making
fits
this
with the
show
horror tropes.
Yeah, like do the people making this show ever watch a TV show? Like how does the camera record that? Where's the camera? Is the cameraman
Gary's,
a mouse?
Gary's dad is Michael Myers without the mask.
Yeah, Michael Myers just tried to settle down and raise a family and get a new asphalt driveway, but Tim had to complicate everything.
We get some ambulance doors closing, transitioning us to probably a commercial, and we come back to the hospital, where the doctor says he has to do more surgery now.
Yep.
And to make sure that Tim doesn't leave the room, they've hired a security guard. A top security guard of the hospital is there to guard Tim's door.
Yes, and now, as a result of this and having to get more surgery, Tim is not going to be able to go to the air show with Mark on Sunday. And Mark is very pissed about this, rightfully so. And He is storming out of the room, angry at Tim, because, and Tim is saying, oh, well, your mother can take you. And Mark says, no, I wanted to go with you. And
that's touching.
Yeah, like, it is.
Mark wanting to, in a way, it makes it a little too real world tragic to him go, I just wanted to spend some fucking time with my dad. And my dad is so self-involved that I can't do that because of his own actions.
It's like for a few minutes here, Mark is in a drama, and Tim and everyone else are still in this kaleidoscopic cartoon of a Home Improvement episode. So there's these weird real emotions we have to contend with when we just watched Tim get twirled around by the throat. So Jill sends the other two boys out and says to Tim, how could you? And Tim goes, well, that award was very important to me. And she says, evidently it was more important than your son. And then Tim tries to weasel out and say the medication made him do it, that he heard voices that said, go beat your record. And
ay, ay, ay.
And Jill says, well, you let your son down, and he's completely devastated. And she leaves, and Tim goes, This day couldn't get any worse. And then the doctor comes in, putting on a glove, and says, ready for your enema? And Tim goes, I'm having shoulder surgery. Is that really necessary? And the doctor goes, no, but I'm trying to break Dr. Sokol's record for the most number of enemas in one day. Funniest joke in the episode.
I can't stand because we're recording, but I am giving 10 chef kisses in the air to that.
Oh, I'm given 20 more. It's great. It's so well done. Perfectly written, perfectly crafted, perfectly delivered.
We go to the operating room again. Tim is starting to go under and begins dreaming. He starts counting down, and the dream begins.
And if you thought the episode was weird already, get ready. Yeah, he sees.
I love this.
This is great.
He sees Dr. Giggles.
Dr. Wilson Giggles.
It is, but it's not played by Larry Drake. It is played by Earl Hinman. Wilson is showing up in Tim's dream as the doctor performing surgery on him, and he is maniacal. Earl Hinman is putting in a legitimate horror movie performance here.
He's having the time of his life, and also so many of these shots in this dream sequence are done from a shot of Tim, and then it's shots from Tim's point of view of Wilson delivering these intense lines, leaning right into the camera with his face filling the frame and his eyes bugging out in the surgical mask.
Extreme close-up, fisheye lens sort of deal. It's weird. But the camera work for the rest of the sequence, as they're kind of talking here, is handheld, and it's kind of like roaming around Tim's body.
Yeah.
It was also very horror film-esque.
It's very dreamlike, and also it's very good handheld camera work because it's kind of floating around to frame in Wilson and then Tim based on who's talking, and then there's moments where Tim sits up, but he sits up perfectly into the camera's eye line, and it's well executed. They put thought and planning into how they, and it's effective. This scene is creepy and very dreamlike, and also they have a disco ball. You can't see it, but there's the lights of a disco ball swirling around the room to kind of give it this weird dreamy vibe. It's very effective.
And Wilson is saying that he's here to do the surgery. Tim's like, have you done surgery before? Well, I've done a gallbladder. I've done circumcision. But I haven't done a brain transplant. Oh boy, does that sound fun?
Just right into the camera. I was freaked out by this. He was having so much fun. He was having the time of his life.
As Tim sits up, fully upright, he does say, oh, I get it. I'm in a dream.
Yes.
And starts to, act that out for a bit. And he's like, okay, well, Wilson, what would you tell me, actually, in real life? And he's like, I don't know. I'm you.
Yeah. Well, it's, yeah, it's something like, because he's also ruminating about what happened with Mark, and he said, like, you know, how he let him down because he was trying to get this award. And Wilson says, well, you know what I always say, neighbor, look out for number one. And Tim goes, you never say that. And he says, well, I've never done brain surgery either. So, yeah, and so then he just pushes Tim back down to start the procedure, and then from that we just...
And maniacally laughs.
Oh, God. And from that, we cut back to the Taylor house, and just we're supposed to go back into the world after all this.
Ding dong! There's a blue angel at the door.
More dream logic? Who even knows? Well, because Mark goes to answer the door, you know, still sullen, sad Mark, and he answers the door, and one of the blue angels is there, you know, dude in an Air Force uniform, and he says, there's a blue angel at the door, and then in the next room, not seeing this, Randy goes, yeah, sure, and the tooth fairy's in the microwave. I like that.
Yeah, it's an easy joke, but Randy delivers it.
No,
well.
Totally easy joke.
Anyway, the Blue Angel's there. He's going to take Mark to see the show. And in fact, he'll come by and pick him up so that Mark can ride with him in his Jeep on the way there.
Yeah. And he explains that, that Tim called him and asked him, you know, can you bring Mark as your guest? And Mark goes, oh my God, that's amazing. And Jill says, well, your dad's a pretty amazing guy. And the Blue Angel goes, well, we're all big fans of the Tool Man, especially when he's nowhere near our aircraft. And
I mean, outside of that last line, does all still feel like dream logic to me.
Yeah. Yeah. No, totally. Which is part of the, I mean, this is the part that upsets me so much. Like, Tim legit did a shitty thing, as he frequently does, and then the way that he solves it is, oh, actually, it turns out the Blue Angels, I'm really good friends with them. I wasn't calling them to, like, if you're this tight with the Blue Angels, why weren't you just calling them to hang out in the first place? But then also, it's like, you've done something horrible and betrayed your son's trust and showed that you put your own selfish needs ahead of your son's. I'm gonna make one phone call to the Blue Angels, get him a Jeep ride, that'll smooth all of this over.
Listen, I don't think it smooths over the actual problem, but I do think it's kind of a cool thing that he did for Mark. And in fact, I'm sure Mark needs a little time away from Tim, and at least this way, he doesn't get to miss the whole, you know, airfield or, you know, celebration and the exploration of that. He still gets to do it and do it way cooler than if he was going with Tim. There just needs to be an additional... like, hey, man, I fucked up big time. I put myself in front of you, and that sucked, and I won't do that again. But in the meantime, here's a Blue Angel for you.
And he's yours. Keep him. Do whatever you want. Don't feed him after midnight. I would have bought it if that had happened. Because, like, Mark calls Tim at the hospital, and I'm thinking, oh, okay, well, here, this will make everything better. And Mark is just raving about how cool it is, and, oh, thank you, Dad. And Tim goes, oh, have a great time, and I promise I'll take you next year. And it's like, there is no, I'm sorry, I fucked up, just...
Right.
Yeah, so, yeah.
Well, and it does seem like, you know, again, I'm not a parent, so, you know, fuck me for any kind of, you know, Monday morning advice here, but it doesn't feel like it's instilling any lesson in Mark either. Like, no. It's just like, hey, I fucked up, and if you fuck up in life, just buy yourself out of it, and you'll be good to go.
Yep. And that's the lesson that it instilled in all the kids watching it, including us.
But after Tim hangs up with Mark, we are left lingering in the hospital room where Tim is thinking about getting up and moving, and the top security guard of the hospital shows up in the doorway and just intimidates Tim back down.
And he lays back down and doesn't go anyplace. And
we go to commercial a little bit later. Our stinger is Tim falls asleep and starts to dream again.
Yep.
Dr. Giggles shows up, and so does Jill
in a kind of saucy nurse's uniform with a chainsaw, which is what they're going to be using for the surgery.
Yeah, she does.
Jill, I didn't know you were a nurse. Oh, I'm not. I just like the shoes.
I mean, listen, I don't know that there's a way that you can play the, like, parody of a buxom nurse while holding up a chainsaw and not pose like this, but
yeah.
It did call to mind the cover of Hollywood Chainsaw Hookers.
Yes, of course. I thought the same thing when I saw it. To me, it called to mind the sexy nurse who gets sent to Ferris Bueller's house in Ferris Bueller's Day Off. But, you know, we each have our own touchstones culturally.
But what happens in this dream sequence? Let's just wrap this thing up.
They just announced they're going to be using this chainsaw for the surgery, and also that Wilson isn't going to be performing surgery. He's just here to visit. The real surgeon is him, and he points down to the foot of the gurney or hospital bed that Tim's on, and the little boy Gary, whose car Tim destroyed, pops up and says something like, you know, get ready for the operation, stupid head, or the doctor is in, stupid head, something stupid head, I don't know. But
the camera just, like, does a zoom in, zoom out, zoom in, zoom out.
Yeah, similar to the bit in The Burbs where Tom Hanks and his neighbor are both screaming.
Maybe the best moment in cinema history.
I do watch that scene on YouTube all the time. But, yeah, more high camp. The highest camp of any episode of Home Improvement thus far. If the show keeps getting more camp, I might like it more. I don't know.
We'll see. I know that we still have some of our more conceptual episodes ahead of us. So,
Oh, boy.
We'll find out. We get some outtakes of Richard Karn flubbing his lines as a MC telling Tim what he's going to get for winning this award.
Yeah.
It's pretty funny.
Yeah, messing up the specs on the steamroller, yeah.
Truman.
Landon.
I have a question in mind.
Okay.
And that question is, which translates to the grunt count. What is it? Tell me, sir.
Okay, so really more of a statement that you've backwards engineered into a question. Well, do you want to guess what the grunt count is? Because that's really, you're asking me to ask you a question, is what you really are doing.
I am just going to guess, even though, it seems like they are setting up situation. It's almost as if they are trying to get us to think that we have more work ahead of us than we do.
Yes.
Because there are situations set up here where, like, particularly naming the specs of the steamroller, like, mm-hmm. why Tim 100% would let off a string of 10 grunts in season two or three of the show.
Yes.
I don't think we get any grunts in this episode.
Well, Landon, you're correct. No grunts in this episode. He comes close a couple times. He gets down into that vocal register, but there's no grunts. Tim at the high, like, Tim has arguably the best moment he's ever had, like, in his life, just in terms of everyone cheering for him, everyone chanting his name, Tim Taylor, the King of Tools. He's hoisting a tool
over
his head.
Why isn't he grunting along with everyone saying Tim?
Why is
he
not grunting?
That seems like the epitome of a grunt moment to me.
It's just fascinating. It really, I don't know. I mean, I think I say the same thing every week, and I think every week I say that I say the same thing every week, but I just am so surprised at how little grunting there is in the show.
I my end of the season guess might end up being zero, although I do believe we had one or two grunts at some point in the season. I couldn't tell you what episode, when, where, how they happened, but as we are nearing the end of the season and we're going to the post-amble here, I don't even know how to, like, I could kind of calculate in previous seasons of, like, oh, okay, we were here at the end of the previous season, and I think we averaged about this many grunts per episode this season, so I could fathom a guess. No clue what we have this season. I have none.
I'm not keeping a tally, but you would be, a safe, smart guess would be in the 10 to 12 range. That's all I'm saying. Like, based on my memories, like,
That's less grunts per episodes in the season. That's weird.
Yes. No, that's very weird. The average episode in, like, season one had usually, you could count on 8 to 10 grunts, I feel like. And this time, they say based on the comedy of Tim Allen at the end of every episode, but is it anymore, really?
If there's no grunts, what are we even doing here?
Just work.
Listen, we are work.
Just putting on our hard hats and going down into the podcast mines every day. Mining for grunts that are not there. They're going to have to shut down the podcast. It's run dry, folks.
Well, listen, we're coming close to our season spectacular. The end of the season is in sight. We've got some cool bonus episodes lined up for you guys. But, you know, every season we do our super spectacular. And we also have a few things planned for that, including one that we had mentioned last episode. And just want to invite people and remind people what that is, which is we want to hear from you what you think home improvement is gets right, what it doesn't get right. You know, 20 years after it's ended, you know, what still resonates with you from home improvement? This came from me shitting on Friends and then being rightly so shown a different perspective on it and seeing all the good things that Friends did. So we want to do the same thing for home improvement.
Yes.
I want to hear from you. So you can hit us up on our email, which is info@gruntworkpodcast.com. Or on Twitter or Instagram @GruntworkPod, or you can join our Discord where you can join in the discussion there. Any way you want to get a hold of us, we want to hear your thoughts. So do that.
Yeah, yeah. Fill us in. Tell us. What does this show mean to you? Basically summing up also, what Landon just said, but I wanted to participate.
Here's your gold star.
Thank you.
Also, be on the lookout on Twitter for our People's Choice MVP that we do every season.
Ooh, yeah.
Truman and I, we debate who we think the MVP is of the season, but we put it out to you, the listeners, the fans of Home Improvement, to choose who you think is the People's Choice MVP. It doesn't fucking matter what we think.
No.
We're just two schlubs talking about this week after week. You are the real, I mean, listen, you can win the Palme d'Or, but we all know the People's Choice Awards are the ones that matter.
Wait, which is why Will Smith is the president.
So we will get those up on Twitter pretty soon. Results will be revealed in our Super Spectacular. Lastly, I want to mention that our Super Spectacular this year is going to be a huge live show on our Discord.
What?
You can join our Discord and watch us record this live. You can engage with us to some degree in the chat boxes. We will be checking in periodically throughout the episode to field your responses, your questions, your comments, your suggestions.
Your heckling.
Feedback.
your heckles.
Come heckle us.
Your original fan art, you know, anything. Anything you want to send, we'll react to or be distracted by in the process of recording.
Anyone knows the ghost of Don Rickles, invite him. That's all I got. Super spectacular stuff is coming your way. So, Truman, I ask every episode, is there anything that we didn't cover that you want to cover?
And as I say every time, nope, I got it all. I left it all out on the field.
Or do you want to mention that you were on the Tope Suicida podcast?
Oh, that. Well, no, Landon, you see, the thing is, I was on the Tope Suicida podcast like weeks ago, and I completely forgot that because I have the brain of a goldfish. Folks, I just remembered this of my own accord. I was on an episode yet again of the Tope Suicida podcast. It's a podcast about what wrestling can be. I sat down and I watched a wrestling event with Mike and Bo, hosts of Tope Suicida, that was a brand
previous
new wrestling
guests on the show.
Previous guests on this show, wrestling event between two wrestlers whose names I don't remember at the moment because again it was a couple weeks ago and we were drinking at the time. But it was a wrestling event that was recorded in February of 2020, right before the world changed in some major ways, and it was a very exciting and thrilling adventure, and we had a good time talking about it. And if you want to listen to that, you should go look up Tope Suicida wherever you get your podcasts and give it a listen, because even if you don't like wrestling, and here's a hint, I don't really like wrestling that much. I love Tope Suicida. I listen to the podcast all the time. It's fucking hysterical. It's much like this show is nominally about home improvement, but mainly about two friends being friends and talking about shit. Tope Suicida is that, but those two friends are also really good musicians and do a lot of original music for the show. So, a better version of us.
And we have no musical inclinations whatsoever. That's why you get talk singing.
Yes, exactly. Well, I mean, I could bust out my trumpet, but I don't think that's really the sort of thing people tune into podcasts for.
Is this the time to bring back my mouth magic?
Oh, God. I don't know, man. Wow. That's really good. Wow, that sounds better than me with a trumpet on my mouth.
With a trumpet on my mouth. I think on that we're gonna go out.
Yep. Get out of here. Let's hustle me out the door, folks. Tope Suicida podcast. Listen to it.
Gruntwork is made possible by our patrons. If you enjoyed today's episode and want to help us create the show, consider becoming an official Grunthead sponsor over at patreon.com/gruntworkpod. You will also get access to our growing archive of Gruntwork Nights episodes where we talk about anything but the TV show Home Improvement.
Oof.
Leave us a rating or review over at Apple Podcasts, wherever you listen to these things. It's the fastest, easiest way to support us, and it goes a long way to help others find the show. Stop by to say hi to us on Twitter or Instagram at GruntworkPod, or visit our website at
www.gruntworkpodcast.com.
Where you can
that always
also
tickles
see
you
other...
so.
I am never sure how much hesitation you're getting. I don't know how much you zone out in the first part of the outro.
Landon, I listen carefully to what you say, even if I don't always 100% remember what other podcasts I've been on. I always remember the podcast that I am currently on.
On our website, you can also find information about today's show, and more importantly, sign up for our weekly newsletter to be notified whenever new episodes are released, which is every Tuesday, unless we're on a break. Until next week, when we bring you another episode of Home Improvement. I've been Landon Solano.
I've been Truman Capps. And remember, participation trophies are why millennials are weak little crybabies, but trophies for perfect attendance on your own tool show are totally A-OK and they're great.